You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The International Court of Justice has delivered a landmark, albeit non-binding, ruling that countries have a legal obligation to act on climate change. In this context, climate news in the past week has raised worry for climate advocates. The New Zealand government has passed legislation to reverse the 2018 ban on new oil and gas exploration projects, which is predicted to increase the country's emissions by 14.2 million tonnes, according to official analysis. As well, the United States are seeking to negate the finding that greenhouse gas emissions pose any danger to human health, with the aim to reduce the power of the Environmental Protection Agency to restrict activities that produce these emissions. I spoke to Greenpeace Executive Director Russell Norman about these two cases and their potential consequences for global climate action. Here is our interview. So I've got two cases that I wanted to discuss with you from this past week. Both, I think, represent some pretty important and unfortunate news for global climate action. I'll start with the one from New Zealand. How substantial do you think this decision is in relation to our commitments to addressing climate change under the Paris Agreement?
The government's ambition is certainly to undermine New Zealand's Paris climate change commitments by trying to restart oil and gas exploration, or at least offshore oil and gas exploration. So in 2018, the Ardern government decided to issue no new permits for offshore oil and gas exploration. And that was a significant step forward because, of course, we can't afford to burn existing fossil fuels, let alone look for more. But the current Luxon government is trying to restart that, and so has given itself permission, or is going to change the law to, or has changed the law rather, to enable it to issue new oil and gas exploration permits offshore. But it's very unlikely that this is actually going to happen. And the reason is that there's a huge civil society opposition, which oil companies ran into last time they tried to do this. There's a lot of regulatory uncertainty with a change of government likely to see the ban back in place. They've already spent a lot of time looking for oil and gas and haven't found much. There's not a lot of demand onshore in New Zealand for new gas. Demand has halved over the last decade. And of course, there's the global price for oil isn't especially high, and demand looks set to peak as electrification of transport kicks in. So there's a lot of reasons why it's very unlikely that offshore oil and gas exploration will restart. And that's a good thing from a climate change point of view, because we obviously need to get off fossil fuels.
How do you, I mean, especially in light of what you've just said, how do you respond to the government's defense of the decision that the move was necessary to boost economic activity in the country?
So last winter, there was an electricity shortage in New Zealand. And one of the reasons for that was that over a very long time, New Zealand hasn't invested in new generation, renewable generation. At the same time, gas has been declining. There's been a long-term decline in gas supply as well as gas demand. And that goes back many years. So gas supply peaked in 2001, and ever since it's gone up and down a bit, and ever since 2014, it's been in decline in spite of the efforts by the John Key government to find new gas. And so the idea that the current situation is due to the oil and gas exploration ban, which is something that the Prime Minister says a lot, that is straight, completely untrue. It takes at least a decade between when you issue an exploration permit and when you get gas into production. So even if gas had been, even if an exploration permit had been issued at the end of 2018 and gas had been found, we still wouldn't see any onshore in New Zealand today. It takes longer than that. So the government was just trying to basically lie to people and confuse people about the electricity shortage being due to the oil and gas exploration ban. It wasn't. That was completely false. But more importantly, the long-term future for New Zealand as gas drops out of the system is to build renewables and storage and demand-side management. That is the real opportunity for New Zealand, is to actually reduce our reliance on fossil fuels and particularly imported transport energy. So we spend billions of dollars importing transport energy every year, so petrol and diesel from offshore. And if we electrify the transport network and replace that with renewable electricity generated in New Zealand, it's a tremendous boon for our economy because we don't have to spend $5 to $8 billion a year on imported transport energy and come up with all the foreign exchange to pay for that. So in fact, it's a great economic opportunity for New Zealand to get off fossil fuels.
The other pretty significant ruling that's happened this week is that, which is by the US, seeking to rescind the finding that greenhouse gas emissions endanger human health. Can you speak to some of the consequences of this decision for climate legislation and action in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, the key regulator, the federal regulator over there is the EPA, the Environmental Protection Authority, or agency. And so the EPA basically is able to regulate electricity generating power stations and the amount of climate pollution they're producing, as well as cars, and has been introduced regulations to reduce emissions from those two sources, which are very significant and globally consequential. But they're only able to do this because of a ruling that they made in 2009. And the ruling said, look, you know, greenhouse gas emissions are a danger to public health. So when you look at the impact of extreme heating, for instance, danger to public health, you looked at flooding, sea level rise, storms, all these things are a threat to public health. And on that basis, the EPA was able to regulate them, which goes back to a 2007 Supreme Court decision where the Supreme Court in the US said, look, the EPA is allowed to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, but only if they can demonstrate that there's a danger to human health. And then the EPA did that in 2009. So that ruling is the legal basis, if you like, for the ability of the federal government to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from cars and power generation. So what Trump, the climate-denying madman, is trying to do is to say, I know how to unravel all this. We'll change the science. Imagine, so this ruling, this endangerment ruling, we can overturn all of that by saying climate change is fine and all the science is bunkum. And then that undermines the ability of the EPA to even regulate greenhouse gas emissions. And so that's what they're currently trying to do, is to unravel that 2009 endangerment ruling by the EPA, which would then remove the ability of the EPA to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, which obviously would be a disaster globally as well as extremely consequential in the United States.
Would you say these decisions reflect a wider spreading disengagement with accountability and leadership surrounding the need for global climate action?
Well, I mean, I think what's happened is there's been obviously a huge pushback from the fossil fuel industry by, you know, the success of the climate movement, which has been putting a lot of pressure around reducing greenhouse gas emissions and has had some significant wins over the last couple of decades in terms of doing that. And so what the oil and gas industry has done, and agribusiness in New Zealand, is that they have influenced the right-wing parties and got them now to a position where the right, which 10 years ago was on board for climate action, but obviously were not as enthusiastic for it, but nonetheless accepted the science. We're in the situation now where under pressure from the oil and gas industry, which has been obviously giving donations to climate deniers and all the rest of it, the right now has become associated with climate denialism. And you see that in New Zealand, but you especially see that in the United States. And so the bipartisan consensus which had emerged, whereby even right and left-wing parties were of a view that you need to take action on climate change, that has fallen apart. And so now you have these right-wing climate-denying populists, if you like Donald Trump, who are completely lying to people about climate science. And obviously we see the same here with ACT and New Zealand First and to a large extent Christopher Luxon. They are undermining the global consensus around climate change. So now it's become this partisan issue, which it was less so a decade ago. So it's a success of the lobbying by the polluting industries.
Last week, the International Court of Justice said in a non-binding statement that countries should be held legally responsible for their greenhouse gas emissions. Do you think that there's any tangible or legitimate means by which states can be held responsible for such decisions which undermine necessary steps towards climate action?
It's going to take some further steps before we get to that point. But in the immediate, what the ICJ ruling gives us is another leg to put under our domestic legal cases. So there's domestic climate cases happening all around the world in many national jurisdictions. And so the ability to lean on the ICJ ruling, which was a unanimous verdict in terms of states' responsibility to meet their Paris climate commitments. That ruling does provide support to those domestic cases. Whether, you know, what the actual mechanism might be further down the track in terms of compensation is not so clear, but we certainly, it does mean in the short term that these climate cases have more strength. And that's really relevant in New Zealand. So, for instance, you know, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade has said that this government's decision to roll back the ban on offshore oil and gas exploration is likely to breach the trade agreement that we have with the European Union because it's a breach of the Paris Commitment. All of those rulings start to wrap up together and reinforce each other. So you've got this, it coming together of a bunch of legal rulings which will help each other, but it's still, you know, obviously a bit of a challenging legal pathway we've got ahead of us.
Finally, is there any kind of role that individuals in New Zealand in any country where it's quite important that the government is seeking urgent action on climate change, is there any role for individuals to play in terms of supporting that pressure or respond to what their government is doing, let's say specifically here in New Zealand as well?
Look, the climate change is innately about power and conflict. So the polluting industries, they never agree to reduce their pollution on any issue. It always involves people exercising their power to influence government to regulate polluters, and polluters always oppose it. And so New Zealand obviously is no exception to that. So Fonterra here are fighting tooth and nail against every effort to control their freshwater pollution and their climate pollution, which are closely linked. Likewise, the fossil fuel industry. Engaging in the political process, putting pressure on all political parties to take action on climate change, speaking out about it, supporting organisations like Greenpeace and lots of others who are campaigning on it, all of those things and many others are really critical. And obviously there's local body elections coming up, so people should support candidates who support, for instance, public transport, they should support candidates who don't want to build houses on floodplains. There's still houses going into floodplains in New Zealand today. This is about how power is exercised in our society. And if people don't want the polluters to control all the decisions, then they're going to have to intervene.
That was Greenpeace Executive Director Russell Norman on recent decisions which will impact the global climate response.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.